If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
Dr. Wolf on the stand today in the trial of Karen Reed, probably one of the best witnesses that we've seen thus far. Just a testimony that was unimpeachable. It was just... It was quite a moment for the trial. We'll take a look at that here in just a second. What are your thoughts on Dr. Wolf?
I think he's an incredible witness to have on the stand. And they're going to, you mentioned just before we started recording that they're trying to poke holes in some of the theories and ideas behind what happened to John O'Keefe. But here's what you're not going to be able to poke a hole in. This man has, I think it was 40 years experience in being a neurosurgeon. This man knows the human brain inside and out. He know, and he worked in a trauma center. Mm-hmm. So it's not just, oh, I've studied the brain. Yeah. He has seen some shit. He has seen people who have been in accidents. He has seen skull injuries that you wouldn't even want to see in a horror movie. He has seen it in real life.
Yeah.
He knows what trauma looks like.
I was kind of getting the chills just listening to him because it's, I can't do surgery watching stuff or even like talking about it. It just kind of gets to me. Don't like the gore.
It's sobering. I worked in the veterinary industry for 8 years. When we would have a hit by car come in, we call them HBC.
Yeah.
And I won't go into detail, but it stays with you. You don't forget this
stuff.
Do
you get desensitized at a certain point because you get to see it so much, or is it still stay shocking every time?
You know, for those who work in the emergency facilities, I think they do get desensitized. Yeah. I worked in just a clinic. Mm-hmm. So we would get these emergency cases probably once every 3 weeks.
Sure.
It stays with you. And when you can't wash the blood off because... when blood dries, it gets very sticky.
Yeah.
I remember standing in the bathroom, bawling my eyes out, scrubbing my hands that were covered. And I couldn't get it off of me. And I almost lost it. Like, I can't go back to work because I can't walk into an exam room looking like I just walked out of a
murder scene.
Thriller.
Yeah.
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 So it does stay with you. The smells sometimes... will trigger some things that, you know, if you're out in public and something just hits you the wrong way, like,
Okay.
So, no,
Thank you for the answer. Thank you for the answer to the question.
It could have just been yes or no.
But now we know more.
But once you've seen it and experienced it, it absolutely does stay with you.
I can imagine.
And you learn. You progressively learn if this is something that, you know, this man has done for his entire life. He's not a moron. He's not an idiot.
No.
This guy knows his shit.
Let's watch some of his testimony from today. Kind of reminds me of Doctor or the Detective Bookman from Seinfeld. If you're trying to like get a visual on who this guy is, you were checked out the Tropic of Cancer back in 1978, didn't you, Jerry? No one.
Wow, that was an old reference.
No one. Takes advantage of the you library.
You haven't seen the court and jury in the case having hearings for the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
By the way, we had a juror incident this morning, too.
Good morning.
Yeah, we'll talk about that after Bookman.
All right, whenever you're ready, Mr. Brennan.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Could you please introduce yourself to the jury, spell your first name and last name for the court reporter?
Sure. My first name is Isaac, A-I-Z-I-K. It's phonetic.
Bookman.
Last name is Wolf, W-O-L-F, like the real thing.
What do you do for a living?
I'm a brain surgeon.
Is there a special part of medicine that you study?
Well, my main interest in brain surgery is brain tumors and trigeminal neuralgia. But I also specialize in movement disorders. I do pediatrics and adults.
Are you an active working neurosurgeon?
I am very active working neurosurgeon. I get up every day at 4:30 in the morning to go to work. 5 days a week, I take call 300 days out of 365 days a year.
Did you work yesterday?
Yes, I did.
What type of work did you do yesterday?
I did two brain surgeries yesterday.
Are you working tomorrow?
I have four surgeries scheduled for tomorrow, which is why this is a little bit late for me, and I have four on Friday.
Jesus.
And what type of surgeries do you have tomorrow and Friday?
I have three brain tumors, one trigeminal neuralgia, and on Friday I have four patients with movement disorders.
You're here today as a witness. How much of your practice, how much percent of your income is from being a consultant or a witness for a case?
Probably less than 1%. I don't do this for a living.
I want you to take us through some of your education and background. Could you share with us where you went to medical school and where you graduated from?
I went to Yale Medical School. I graduated summa cum laude.
Was that in 1981 that you graduated?
Correct.
After medical school, did you begin internships and medical residency?
I did an internship at Hennepin County Medical Center, which is a trauma center in Minneapolis. I then did 5 years of neurosurgical residency at the University of Minnesota.
And was that in Minnesota?
Correct, in Minneapolis.
Is there something about that hospital that has some specialty?
It was one of the number one training centers for chairmen in neurosurgery at the time.
A good
did
hospital.
You, in your residency and in your fellowships, do any work or study in pathology?
During your residency as a neurosurgical resident, you do 6 months in neurology. You do 3 months of neuroradiology. You do 3 months in pathology, which includes autopsies on brains. And then you do rotations through a trauma center as a chief resident, through a VA hospital, and then ultimately at the university hospital for elective cases. We also do 6 months of pediatric neurosurgical residency.
Did you do a fellowship at New York University?
Yeah, at NYU, I did a fellowship before I went to the University of Maryland as a professor in brain transplantation. The interest was in using cells to create dopamine centers in rat brains with the concept of Parkinson's being curable with transplantation.
I'd like you to take us through some of your faculty positions, and so you can share with us some of the progression of your training and experience.
Like the Frank Sinatra brain surgery.
Did you begin at the University of Maryland Hospital?
Yes. In 1987, the University of Maryland recruited me to start their epilepsy surgical program and skull-based program. And then part of our responsibilities as assistant professors was to cover shock trauma.
Could you explain for us what shock trauma means and whether the University of Maryland Hospital was a shock trauma hospital?
So the University of Maryland and shock trauma were actually two separate entities when I started. A man named Cowley had basically developed the concept of the golden hour. So prior to Dr. Cowley, most trauma was just taken locally. That meant as a community hospital, if a patient had been in a motor vehicle accident, they needed an orthopedic surgeon, they had to call the orthopedic surgeon in, could take 15 minutes, could take 3 hours. The same thing for a vascular surgeon, the same thing for a neurosurgeon. Dr. Cowley came up with the concept that you needed a center that was strictly for trauma and every attending had to be in the hospital 24/7. So that was the concept of shock trauma back in the 80s. When I got there, we were transitioning from a very small center to a 125-bed hospital that was completely committed to trauma.
In that experience, in the years you worked there, did you have an opportunity to treat a number of people with brain injuries?
We treated well over 100 patients a year, a month, basically, with brain injuries at shock trauma, along with spinal cord injuries.
Did you perform surgeries in different types of brain trauma and brain injuries?
Yes.
After Maryland in 1993, did you move to Miami Neuroscience Center?
Yes. In 1993, I left academics. I went into private practice in Miami, and I started the Miami Neuroscience Center. We were the first private community hospital to have what's called the Gamma Knife. So we were the 13th in the country, but the only one that was non-university based. And Gamma Knife radiosurgery is using radiation to operate on the brain.
Are you presently the director of the Miami Neuroscience Center at Larkin Hospital?
Yes, I am.
You conduct a number of surgeries a year there?
Correct. So I spent 19 years at Doctors Hospital, then we moved to Larkin Hospital 13 years ago.
I'm going to move him up because it's basically a lot of his credentials. And if you want to watch the whole thing, we have it up for you.
And he's got plenty of them.
It goes on and on and on and on. He's, like I said, he's good. It's one of the best in the country.
If you've got a tumor, you want this guy working on your head.
Yeah.
Laceration on the back of his head was caused by a fall. Could this be caused by a fall landing on hard ground?
Yes. I mean, like I said, it's a classic blunt trauma laceration.
I'm going to go back just a little bit.
It's like very thin leather. And it's getting bruised. You can think of it as if you took a hammer to your thumb. It's really turning black and blue. Those are the contusions. And so the temporal poles and the frontal poles are getting contusions because of that. At the same time, you have a space called the subarachnoid space. And I'm sure they're going to hear about the subarachnoid hemorrhage. And that space is the little, it's very clear, thin membrane that covers all of your brain and all of your spinal cord. And normally, you really don't see it unless you open up the brain and you're operating. But when you either have a traumatic event like this, where little vessels are pulling apart underneath that membrane, or for example, the classic, you know, when you have an aneurysm burst, the space that the aneurysm bleeds to is the subarachnoid space. The other thing that occurs in trauma like this is you can get a subdural. So the dura is the membrane that covers the whole brain and also right down your spinal canal. And it's a very thin membrane that looks like very thin leather. And in that space between the brain and the dura can be a lot of veins that go towards a central vein called the sagittal sinus. And if those tear, you have a venous hemorrhage from, you know, which is not arterial, so it's not quick, but that can develop into a subdural as well. If you tear a portion of your brain as well, and you get a little arterial bleeds, that could create a much faster subdural hematoma. And so when you look at the pathology, the autopsy of his brain, you're looking at a subarachnoid hemorrhage, you're looking at a subdural hemorrhage, neither one of them, which was huge, or would have required surgery, as well as the contusions that I described in his frontal poles, in his temporal poles, and then the original bang, which was in the occipital area. These are all findings that you would see on a CT scan and an MRI scan without requiring an autopsy if he had made it to the emergency room.
I want to take a step back. At the beginning, you said that this laceration on the back of his head was caused by a fall. Could this be caused by a fall landing on hard ground?
Yes. I mean, like I said, it's a classic blunt trauma laceration.
Do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of medical certainty whether this injury, the laceration and the basal fracture, was caused by Mr. O'Keefe falling backwards on the ground?
My opinion is that that's what caused his whole injury.
Boom!
Yep, right
the
there.
Pattern of the laceration, do you have an opinion whether that is consistent with hitting the cold, hard ground?
Objection, Your Honor. Can we have silence on that, please?
So I'm sustaining the objection, so no sidebar.
Your Honor?
Do you have an opinion, Doctor, about whether that laceration on the back of his head was caused by a particular movement?
Well, the only way he could get this kind of an injury was to fall backwards, hit the back of his head, and then the resulting, you know, energy forces going into his brain, into his base of his skull.
Would that type of laceration require Mr. O'Keefe to have hit a line type or a ridge type object?
A ridge type of object?
Yes.
No, I mean, like I said, the tearing of the skin in that fashion, you could look it up, would be just a classic blunt trauma injury.
Is there anything about that injury that would suggest to you it had to have been something sharp or ridge-like to cause?
Objection, Your Honor. Begin request kindly a sidebar on this.
All right, we'll come to sidebar.
Thank you.
If you're watching this, you can see me squirming over here.
Yeah.
I don't know. I could never have been a surgeon. That's just...
Well, some people are not cut out for that, and that's fine. We don't want you working on people if you're squeamish. Even the doctors I worked with, there was one or two cases where something triggered them and they had to leave the room.
It's not what you want to have happen during surgery.
Well, I'm not going into detail, but there is something very specific that happened that was unexpected. So,
okay.
You know, we're all human. It happens. It happens. But yeah, it's... It gets your attention, you know?
Yeah.
And your stomach's a little queasy.
Oh, yeah. Not good for a surgery room. So earlier in the day, they're on a sidebar right now, so we're watching the fan, if you're listening. Earlier in the day, the jury had to go meet one-on-one with Judge Beverly over a matter. Do we know what the matter is? I've heard some rumblings.
I have not heard those rumblings. What did you hear?
Here's the rumblings I've heard. Okay, I'm not on News Nation tonight. Anyway, I'm just reading a note. The rumblings, take it for what it is. It was something about someone expressed to the judge that they were uncomfortable with the stares that they were getting from Karen Reed, Team Karen, and her dad. Uh-oh. like uncomfortable staring. That's the rumbling. I don't know. I mean, if that is the case, I'm sure the judge had to go ask everyone, how do you feel about this? When they came back, two of the jurors were in, they just switched seats basically.
So I don't
but
know.
But they're we haven't seen the jury, but by the way the courtroom appears to be laid out, doesn't everybody have a view of Karen?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so I don't know what...
have a view of them.
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But we don't, as of this moment, we don't know exactly what was going down. It looks like sidebar is done, and they're going back to more testimony.
So as we were discussing, Dr. Wolf, you said this is a classic fall backwards. Is there anything about the pattern of that laceration that would suggest that there was a ridge or a line-type edge that caused that wound?
Not necessarily.
And have you seen, in your experience, similar types of lacerations and breaks caused by falling on hard ground?
Yes, you can see that both in the occipital region. You can see it if patients fall on their, you know, forehead. The skin tears, they're still bridging, and then they get bruises.
Some of your work was in Minnesota?
Correct.
Was it a colder part of Minnesota?
Very cold part of Minnesota. It's Minneapolis.
I'm sorry. Did you often see these type of injuries there?
Yes. I mean, we took care of a trauma center, Hennepin County. Very frequently, patients that are drunk fall down on ice sidewalks and could develop, you know, lacerations in their head, epidurals, which are blood clots above the dura because they fracture a bone in the temporal area. And they can get a bleed from a fractured artery. And it happens when people are shoveling snow and have a heart attack and fall backwards. So there are various ways that people fall, resulting in head injuries and lacerations to their forehead or to different areas of their head.
Can somebody suffer this type of injury simply by falling backwards?
Absolutely.
You had taken us through the process of falling backwards and then talked about what happens to the brain. Can I ask you a couple detailed questions about that?
Sure.
When you explained that the brain upon impact then shifts forward and hits the front of the skull, is there a medical term for that process?
Well, the medical term is a coup contre coup injury. So the coup is when you first hit, in this case, it was the back of the head, as summarized by the laceration in the back of the head, and the contusions that the pathologist and the ME found in the back of the brain. And then the brain shifts forward, and as it's traveling at a certain velocity, because it's thrust forward on the floor of the base of the skull, it's getting bumped, and it's getting, again, you can think of it as a hammer hitting a thumb. It's getting black and blue in the areas that are sharpest.
Are there symptoms that result of the process coup contre coup?
It's, you know, this is clinically, it varies. I mean, you can go from anywhere from a simple concussion where you sort of are unaware of what happened, but you're still awake, you're confused, all the way to, you know, ultimately being in a coma.
Can this type of injury, the coup contre coup and what you see in the review of your files, could this type of injury happen from an attack by a weapon like a bat or a hammer?
Well, he did not have a depressed skull fracture. So any focal hit like that would more likely than not have caused a depressed skull fracture. Blunt trauma the way he had, the assumption, would cause the coup contre coup without a depressed skull fracture.
When the coup contre coup process happens with the skull fracture, does anything happen to the front of the skull?
Well, you're asking me, does the rest, I mean, the forces, depending on how hard they are, can generate fracture lines all the way to the anterior fossa. So you can have fractures along the lateral temporal area. You can have fractures along the orbital roof. The orbital roof is very thin. And so those forces can go all the way to that area.
Did you see any sign of orbital fractures in Mr. O'Keefe?
Yes. He had both the ME and the pictures taken, and the neuropathologist mentioned fractures of the orbital roof.
Do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of medical certainty how those fractures occurred?
From the trauma.
Could you just explain a little bit how that would happen?
Well, as he fell backwards and he struck his head, it was clearly at a very high speed generated by the gravity. The bone, depending on the quality of his bone, the density, then generated forces. There's a certain amount of lateral give, and then you get a linear force going forward. It drives all the way up the clivus and forward into the anterior fossa where his orbital roofs lay. And this is why people like this get what they call raccoon's eyes.
Do you have an opinion whether the brain itself could have caused the orbital fractures?
No. The brain is a soft substance. You could literally put your finger through the brain. We often operate on people fully awake.
The brain
couldn't possibly.
I know, Tony. Take a breath.
The fracture was caused by the forces generated through that clivus, that middle bone in the middle of his base of the skull.
Do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of medical certainty whether or not the brain in any way could have caused these orbital fractures?
The answer is absolutely not.
In your study of the records and photographs, and in your experience treating these types of injuries, do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of medical certainty whether or not a person would remain conscious or would be immediately unconscious after the impact of the ground?
Well, it's impossible to know whether he became immediately unconscious, but his injuries were very substantial. And it's more probable than not that at some point he quickly became unconscious and was unable to do functional activities.
What does functional activities mean?
The ability to, you know, get himself up and about would be one of the functional activities. The ability to call for help would be a very significant cortical function. And that's why I was talking about, you know, that there's a variation on a theme from a simple concussion to a severe concussion like this.
If a person does not have functional abilities because they are rendered unconscious, does their body, could it still move?
Yes. This is the interesting thing about our brain. So the cortex, which is the top portion of your brain, can get separated from your brainstem functionally. And what happens then is that your body is not acting autonomically, meaning vegetative. So why does that happen? We think it's because as we were a caveman, and if a caveman became unconscious, as an animal came up to eat it, the animal would touch it. Well, you have these automatic movements. One of them is called decorticating, which is where you draw your arms like this and you throw your feet out. And then a worse neurological situation is when you decerebrate. Now you push your arms out along with your legs. And that would scare off an animal. So we think that over time, genetically, this is what happened to our brains in order to create these. But those kind of movements are not thought processes. In other words, your brain is not telling you, oh, you have pain, go ahead and decorticate or decerebrate. It's an automatic movement in response to pain.
I want you to take us back now to after the fall. Would Mr. O'Keefe, in your study and opinion, have died immediately?
No.
Can you share?
Yes, I'll tell it. There is very few things that you head injury where you would die, quote, immediately. So if I took a knife and stabbed you in the back of your neck right below your skull and I drove it through your brainstem, you would probably die immediately. If I shot you below your ear and went through and through below your ear and shot through your brainstem, you would die immediately. But traumatic head injuries, you would not die immediately. It's a process. And it's a process of a combination of things. Brain swelling, which takes a while to develop. Decreased blood flow to your brain because you're getting swelling. And ultimately, death of the brainstem that controls your heart and your breathing. And so this is why there is a whole big issue about brain death. You know, when is someone brain dead? Because it's not instant and it can take a long time to be conceived. In these injuries that are very severe that we took care of, there was a high mortality rate. In the linear skull fractures, it was about 67%. But it took time for them to die. It could take days to weeks to months. And also, these people got to shock trauma. So it was a while, whether it was hours, before they were even starting to be taken care of. And yet they weren't dead yet. That's why I don't think it was immediate.
Was there any other observations you made about Mr. O'Keefe or his body that support your opinion that he didn't die immediately?
Well, the medical examiner took pictures of his periorbital area and diagnosed raccoon's eyes. So raccoon's eyes occur because there's leakage through the orbital fractures into the periorbital space. Normally, it takes about 24 to 48 hours to develop. It has been noted as early as 1 to 3 hours, which would make it not immediate.
Could we please have Exhibit 14? Dr. Wolf, could you share with us what you see here in this picture?
So right here, you can see the black and blue that sort of configures, if he had his eyes open, like what we describe as raccoon's eyes, right? And that's not caused by direct trauma to his eyelids. It's caused by what I described as the basilar skull fracture, which went to the anterior fossa, which is right over the orbit here, inside with leakage of blood products into that periorbital area.
You mentioned that starts or takes at least 1 to 3 hours to begin?
Minimally, yes.
You take that down, please. If Mr. O'Keefe had been brought to a trauma center or emergency room, what would the process be in your experience?
Well, he would have been intubated if he wasn't intubated in the field. One of the first things you need to do in a head injury is control the airway. Why? Two reasons. One, you want to have enough oxygen going to the brain to feed it. And two, you want to keep your carbon dioxide down because that causes increased intracranial pressure if it elevates. So you want to constrict the blood vessels a little bit. Then he would have had a CT scan immediately in order to assess whether he has a surgical head injury, meaning he needs to go to the operating room to evacuate something or not. During that process, he's obviously going to be getting medication to decrease the brain swelling. And from there, you make decisions based on his neurological function and what you're, you know, capable of doing to, you know, spare the brain from the rest of the injuries that will result. one of the things that occurs with contusions is a great medical term is they can blossom, which means they can get bigger. And if they get bigger, they might require surgical intervention to decrease the pressure as well as the volume of the blood that's destroying brain. And so you do serial CT scans in these patients over time, anywhere from every 6 to 12 hours to on a daily basis, depending on what the case by case, you know, production of blossoming is occurring.
You mentioned that about 2/3 of your patients who suffer this injury pass?
Correct. What we saw is that in the patients that suffered linear clavicle fractures, 2/3 of them ultimately went on to die and 1/3 lived.
Is there commonality on how they pass?
One of the common reasons they pass is if they trapped a major vessel in one of the fractures, they would get a significant brainstem infarct, meaning a stroke, meaning lack of blood flow to a very significant portion of their brainstem. And so that was one of the causes of death that ultimately we understood. And then the others died from the increased intracranial pressure that drove the brainstem down through the foramen magnum.
Did you review any materials that talked about or identified Mr. O'Keefe's body temperature when he was treated?
As I recall, his core temperature was 80 when he was found.
Is that significant in the process and development of his injury from the moment he fell and hit his head until his ultimate passing?
Well, hypothermia, if you define hypothermia, it starts at 95 degrees. Your core temperature is usually about 98, 98.6. 95 is very mild hypothermia. When you get to 82 degrees, you're in severe hypothermia. What happens when you're hypothermic, and I'm a neurosurgeon, but I can tell you that you get into multiple organ failure. Your heart starts to have problems. It can have arrhythmias. You're not breathing. And ultimately, at hypothermia, you also become unconscious and go into a coma-like state. Below 80 degrees, you're probably going to die. So all I can tell you, it wasn't helpful that he had a significant head injury and that he was then found hypothermic.
Is it uncommon in your experience for people that suffer this injury to pass within 5 hours?
Well, none of the patients we treated died within 5 hours, but it also didn't mean that we didn't realize that they were going to be in a potentially vegetative state. When someone's hypothermic, you have to warm them up in order to establish a clinical status, meaning you can't declare someone dead with a temperature of 80. You have to warm them up slowly, appropriately, and then reevaluate where they are clinically.
I've asked you questions about whether you had an opinion about Mr. O'Keefe and when he died. I want to ask it in the form of a formal opinion. Do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of medical certainty whether Mr. O'Keefe died immediately or within 15 minutes?
No, I don't think he died immediately. Neither the hypothermia nor this kind of head injury would kill you immediately in any clinical experience I have.
Dr. Wolf, thank you.
All right.
Let me have a moment, Your Honor.
Sure.
Thank you.
The cross doesn't go very long.
No.
Then we'll take a look at what Karen Reed looked like leaving court today.
Heading right for the bar. At least I would.
I'm wondering if she already has like something in her purse. A little flask to break out during the day.
Going to the bathroom stall, yeah, where nobody's watching.
Yeah.
That's what I'd be doing. Holy cats.
So it looks like the meeting of the minds over there at the defense table.
Yeah. What do you think they're saying? God, we're screwed.
Start drinking now.
Too good.
Who's going to go up and do this? Here we go. Alessi's going to do a little song and
draw
dance.
That short straw again, damn it. I hate when that happens.
Because he's been really effective so far.
Oh, God. It's painful, man. I really wonder what goes on in those sidebars, you know?
All these shots.
May I, Your Honor?
Yes.
For Karen, it's a double, though. It's a weak paw. Good
morning, Doctor. I don't think we've had the pleasure of meeting. Welcome.
Thank you.
Sir, can you just describe, you started to do it a little bit on direct, a typical day for you?
I wake up at 4:15 in the morning. I go to my center. I set up patients with frames for their either radiosurgical procedures or stereotactic craniotomies. I go home. I make cappuccino for my wife at 6 o'clock in the morning. And then I get back to work at 6:30 and move on. I have patients that I'm operating on, and I have patients that I'm seeing through the day.
You just made him more likable.
Yeah. What a sweetheart.
What are you doing? What type of patients and what do you do?
It varies. I mean, I see patients with brain tumors.
Why is he doing this?
I see patients with hydrocephalus, which is water in their brain. I see pediatric brain tumors. I see subacute and chronic subdural hematomas, post-traumatic. I see patients with strokes that are being misdiagnosed. I see patients with cancer, metastatic disease.
Like, make him stop.
I used to see patients likeable.
Unless he's like, oh, I shouldn't have asked that one. I stepped into that.
Guy's a hero.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what else you want me to tell you.
No, that's great. And
is just shut the fuck up.
I wear a cape. What do you want?
You've had for the past month, past few years? Is it generally, without specifics, is it generally?
Correct.
So, none of your typical days, none of the past typical months have involved forensic pathology, have they? You haven't acted as a forensic pathologist in...
I am. You could have asked that question, very straightforward. I am not a forensic pathologist. I'm a brain surgeon.
Right. And you don't perform autopsies, correct, sir? You're a brain surgeon.
Correct. In other words, I see more brains than the forensic pathologist.
Boom! Right.
And is it correct to say that the brains that you see are of living people?
Correct.
Okay. So what I'd like to do...
Are they mannequins?
Is to...
Emus?
Go to... Yeah.
Siamese cats.
A different part of the head than was... discussed, but sticking with the decedent.
Excuse me, I didn't hear the last word.
I'm sorry, with the topic is going to be Mr. O'Keefe, the decedent in this matter, sir. You testified about raccoon eyes. The medical term for that, sir, is ecchymosis, right?
Correct.
And ecchymosis, raccoon eyes, does not cause a laceration to form on an eyelid, does it?
No.
Are you aware that Mr. O'Keefe had a laceration to the outside area of his right upper eyelid?
I am aware that the ME described that, yes, sir.
Now... Could, Your Honor, I'm going to, with Your Honor's permission, ask to publish what is already in evidence in a moment.
Okay.
Mr. Wolk.
What exhibit number, Mr. Alessi?
We're going to
165, Your Honor.
I feel like Alessi's trying to sell a used car, and he's just like shutting down all the, no, I don't want the added warranty. No, I'm good.
Have you seen this photo depiction before today?
I believe I have.
Is it correct that that injury on the upper right eyelid is caused by the application of force directly to that area of the front of the head, again, namely the upper eyelid?
That's possible, yes.
Is it more than possible? Is it probable that that injury was caused by the application of force directly to that area of the front of his head?
Well, an easy answer to that would be is that that's not part of the periorbital ecchymosis.
Thank you, sir. That was exactly going to be my next question. This injury is unrelated to any of what you've been describing, the fall backwards, the force transfer inside the skull, the, as you described it, the dura, the cerebral spinal fluid, all of that dynamic that you so ably described on your direct examination. This injury has nothing to do with that, correct?
Correct.
He's kind of giggling like, you fuckers.
Mm-hmm.
You idiots.
Yeah, that's not good.
It's just like you got schooled. Like you tried to get me to crack or whatever the hell he was trying to lead him into.
Didn't work.
No, he actually did a pretty good job of actually giving another.
Thank you for answering my questions, Dr. Wolf. A pleasure again. No more questions at this time, Your Honor.
Another opportunity to reinforce his credentials.
No, yeah.
Sorry, it's everybody follow the science, everybody. So there's some more science for you. The like amazing brain surgeon that knows all too well what this injury looked like.
Oh yeah, he's seen this before. This was not like, I've never seen that. That was fascinating. No, he's seen a lot of this.
But really, I mean, it's full of puns today. I was going to say it's chilling, and I don't mean to say
Ouch.
That, but it is, and I'm not trying to be a smartass. I'm not. It's spooky. I don't know the idea that John was there for a long time, slowly dying. I can only hope that, you know, he was unconscious and was not cognizant for any of that going on.
Thankfully.
I can't imagine what that would be like, you know, just being incapacitated and you're in that setting and, you know, and the snow just keeps falling on you. I mean, that's.
Yeah, I'm hoping he didn't know what was going on. That would be really hard to stomach, you know, that he at some level knew what was going on, but couldn't move, was incapacitated and just had to give up.
Yeah. So there's that today. Let's take a look at how Karen reacted when leaving the court. Let's see, was she fazed by any of this? Did she have any reactions as she walks out in her several $1,000 suit that the FKR folks have so generously donated to her defense fund?
It's a hell of a way to get a wardrobe.
Let me see if I can turn this up at all.
What's the thing that is going to happen?
Do you hear it
matched
okay?
The glass on the bumper, but the bumper glass didn't match the glass, the cocktail glass, the cup. Nothing on the bumper matched the cup. One piece on the bumper matched a piece found the second week in February by the former trooper Michael Proctor. So he found a piece at 34 Fairview, allegedly, that matched a piece on the glass, on the bumper. Nothing else on the bumper matched the cup.
Yeah, at this point, the glass doesn't matter anymore. Like, I don't care how it got there. Like, yeah. It really doesn't make a damn bit of difference. Your car says you hit him. His phone basically says matches that. And the doctor says this is how he... what happened when he hit the back of his head. There was no signs of a punch or a fight or anything like that. She in her own timeline has basically said, you know, she thought he died, or we thought he died, between 1225 and 1230. But she's stuck on glass. Okay.
Yeah. It's, you know, they can try to focus on that, but this doctor being on the stand refocused things. Mm-hmm. So now she's back to talking about the glass.
Yeah. Got to redirect that a little bit.
Just doesn't resonate.
Yeah.
Just not feeling it, you know?
Yeah, it does not. Look at the shot here of AJ and Karen. Just the still.
He's admiring her.
He is admiring her.
Feels like it anyway.
It's not a look of, oh shit, what is she going to say? Which is really what he should be feeling at this moment in time.
Right.
This is, yeah.
What is the other breaking event of glass? There's multiple sources of glass.
What were your feelings this morning when there was some kind of issue with the jury? What are the emotions?
We've had these before, so we just wait for the judge to evaluate and let it play out and... it all works out.
How about
you feel about the jury?
I feel good about the jury. I feel good about our selection, and I feel good.
How about their case? I mean, they're almost wrapping it up. How have you found it to be different, same, similar, et cetera?
Yep.
Did you see that little freak out of it?
Your witnesses and...
mm-hmm. They've been less effective than the last time around.
Alan's getting a little nervous.
I don't believe so, but I don't know. That's for the jury to say.
What did you learn about the jury issue?
The doctor is not a neuropathologist. He doesn't perform autopsies. So I found him not qualified to speak about medical examiner should.
Okay, Karen.
We have our own medical examiner. Karen, have they asked anyone more than just the doctor's knowledge?
She found them not qualified.
Without an alarm. Without height. Did you know if there's anyone more than just
they're walking.
I believe that's the last one. Okay, so that's it.
I don't know.
Wonder if we get any bill today.
Watch out, Justin. Okay.
What about Brian Albert or Brian?
Just trying to hear what something said.
Ms. Reed, any relaxation planned over the next few days?
No alarms for at least a day.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ms. Reed, what about the shoes?
Thank you.
I don't know, man.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Did you have a sound bite?
They're still rolling, everyone.
Really strange.
It's the FKR cult motorcade there. Let's all go meet at the Ponderosa. They got the 2-for-1 buffets tonight. Is Ponderosa still around? You still have a Ponderosa?
No, it closed numerous years ago.
Is the Perkins gone too? Does Perkins exist anymore?
Perkins, not in this area. I think they're only in Minnesota. I could be wrong about that, but
there used to be one. Closed. I used to go to one there years ago. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. That was Karen Reed today. Utterly disconnected from
reality.
I don't know, you know, it
it's really hard for them to hear them discrediting this doctor. This is a very qualified physician, and no, he doesn't do autopsies. But he knows brains.
Yeah.
He knows what he saw.
He knows a hell of a lot more than the autopsy folks when it comes to this department of what's going on.
I don't get it.
I mean, obviously I don't expect Karen to be like, oh shit, I did hit him at the middle of this, but
right.
I would hope more human beings who are watching along on this and don't have a dog in the fight. It's not your sister. She's not your friend or whatever. It would just kind of look at this like, yeah, I mean, I do get the shadiness of the police department and the issues that were over there. I'm not discounting any of that.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't change these facts.
No.
They didn't hack into the Lexus and change the Lexus coding. These guys, you know, probably would have difficulty turning on a PlayStation. So I don't think they're of that sort of criminal mindset. Shady in some of them, not all of them, some of them. It's not a conspiracy. She did it. She doesn't want to be accountable for it. And she's dug her hole in way too deep. She can't come out of it anymore.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
I don't know.
Miss Karen Reed. Good news. There's no trial. We can all take a big deep breath over the holiday weekend. No trial until Tuesday of next week. So nothing Thursday, nothing Friday, nothing Saturday, nothing Sunday, nothing Monday. That's 5 days Karen Reed free.
Wow. Raise a glass. Sorry.
I'm raising one right now.
My bad.
There you go.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. Oh. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paul Azan, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paul Azan, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paul Azan, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paul Azan, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paul Azan, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paul Azan, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paul Azan, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi there, my name is Annie Elise, aka your true crime BFF and host of the podcast Serialistly. I have been a true crime enthusiast forever, but I wished somebody would break down the cases for me like a friend, giving all the details and discussing every twist and turn. So I decided to create a podcast that does just that. Serialistly with Annie Elise is topping the charts with over 1 million weekly downloads. I do the deep dives in these cases so you don't have to, diving into all the raw details, saying what we're all thinking, and in a conversational way, just like having a conversation with your best friend. So join me and let's talk all things true crime. Serialistly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.